Future-proof extra from News Talk.
Now, at the moment, it seems like the entire science and medicine community is focused just on COVID-19. But of course, that's not true. And while it is an important endeavor to figure out what is this thing that is changing the world as we know it, there are lots of other conditions, some well-known and some more obscure, that still need figuring out. Dr. Joanne Masterson is one of the researchers working on one of those. She's assistant professor at the Department of Biology at NUI Maynooth and member of the Kathleen Lonsdale Institute for Human Health Research. She joins me now. Welcome to the program, Joanne. You're working on a condition I hadn't ever heard of, and that's why I was interested in speaking with you, because I'm always interested in rare conditions, how they come about and how we go about understanding something that is so unusual in a population. What is eosinophilic esophagitis? Is that right?
Eosinophilic esophagitis, yes.
Easy for you to say, as the old joke goes.
Eosinophilic esophagitis, it's a rare disease of the esophagus of the food pipe, where patients with it develop an allergy to food, and they end up with a swelling of the food pipe that causes discomfort. Sometimes it can cause food to get stuck, and it can really affect the quality of life of patients who have it.
When you say a food allergy, presumably it's certain foods.
It is. So there are six specific foods that tend to be the prime candidates for patients to be allergic to. But sometimes we can't even identify what the food necessarily is. In some patients, it's quite complicated. But in general, yes, there are kind of the known targets that we can look at in patients who have it.
So what is it about, I presume peanuts is one of these foods, what is it about the shape of a peanut or the smell of a peanut or the context of a peanut that makes it so deadly to some and causes these weird reactions?
Why peanuts? So yes, there are proteins in there that can be recognized by the immune system much more readily. So our immune system is going to recognize something that comes in that shouldn't be there. And it will try its best to get rid of that, whatever that might be. And so there is certainly things about the proteins that are in peanuts that can aggravate the immune system much quicker than, say, a piece of broccoli.
Is this EoE an acute response, like an anaphylactic shock as a result of a peanut allergy attack, or is it a more chronic thing?
So I think it's important to distinguish that EoE is a disease, and it's separate from those patients who have these anaphylactic emergency responses to peanuts. So food allergy, systemic food allergy, that would be is distinct from this EoE. So the thing about eosinophilic esophagitis is that it is restricted to the esophagus, and the resulting symptoms happen within the esophagus of the patient. So in the food pipe of the patients who respond. So it's a localized reaction to the food pipe, but it's also a chronic disease. So it's not a once-off flare that happens. It's something that can happen continually until it is suitably treated or until we identify what the aggravant is and we take that out of the diet for patients who have it.
What happens then? Your esophagus, sweat, it can swell, it can get inflamed. Food then could get stuck down there, presumably. Is this a risk of choking for people who get this and aren't either prepared for it or didn't know it was coming on?
Absolutely. So it is food getting stuck in the food pipe, in the esophagus, not necessarily in the airways, thankfully. But it can get stuck there, and it does have to surgically be removed in certain times. So these patients who eat often accommodate, their diet can change to adjust to softer textures, to foods that they know they're safer with for swallowing. They might not eat in public. They adjust their behavior around eating as well as what they eat.
Why did you pick this sort of obscure thing to work on and not cancer, Joanne?
So, my PhD was in cancer, was in epithelial biology, so studying a type of cell in the lung. And when I finished my PhD, I wanted to work on something completely different, and I wanted to work on a project where I felt I was having a direct impact on the patients. And science can take many, many years to impact on patients. So I wanted something where I had more engagement with patients through that research. And I came to a place in Denver, Colorado, where a clinician there who had moved from Boston to the Children's Hospital Colorado, Glenn Ferruta, to set set up a multidisciplinary team to center around these patients in their clinical care, but also in research to better understand it. At that stage, it was a really new disease. So I came along as a scientist who was looking to impact on patients. And there was a clinician who was looking for a scientist to help just do just that. So a bit of serendipity, but also the right background in the work that I'd done in my PhD really led to me getting a head start really on trying to understand this disease in the lab.
It's kind of like when the gatekeeper meets the key master in Ghostbusters.
Sure.
Sure, says the scientist, wondering why she's come on this stupid program. Right, so let's talk then about the actual research. So you've talked about the symptoms and we've talked about what causes these symptoms. But what is going on inside the body on a more deeper level? Where are you looking at?
So I'm looking at the, it's a layer of cells called the epithelium. So it is what we call a barrier. It is like your skin, but it's in the esophagus. And it's the barrier between you, what you swallow and the immune system that's underneath. And what we really think is happening in patients who have this disease, and at the time we didn't know it for sure, and now we do, is that the barrier is broken. So there's a leak in that food pipe. And our food is essentially coming into contact with our immune system, and our immune system is naturally reacting to that. So in patients who have EoE, they tend to have this leak, this break in the barrier. And we wanted to try and understand that better, what might be causing it. And most importantly, can we fill that break? Can we repair that barrier leak that is occurring so that the immune system doesn't get to see what we swallow through our esophagus, and to restore health and healing in the food pipe for these patients?
Right. So what actual research is done in the lab then? Are you taking immune cell samples? Are you taking blood samples? Are you doing structural stuff? What are you doing to examine the nature of EoE?
Mm-hmm. So from the clinical perspective, from the patient's perspective, when they go to see their gastroenterologist, their tummy doctor, to try and understand this disease, we'll often take a small little pinch of tissue from the esophagus at the same time as they're in there investigating. And we can take that into the lab then and grow it in culture dishes. We can examine it under a microscope. We can do certain tests on it to try and understand why the barrier might be broken, what molecules are ineffective.
Right.
What proteins are not working properly, and then we can treat that with drugs in the petri dish in the lab and see if certain drugs are improving that barrier to restore and heal that leak.
Right. So someone's listening to the radio at the moment and they're saying, that sounds a bit like me. If they go to their GP, this is something the GP would be aware of at this stage, and something that they might go, oh, I've heard of this, or is it likely that people might still be overlooked?
I think it's possible that still people unfortunately are being overlooked. I think that it is worth pushing for a second perspective if you continue to have symptoms. Patients often have reflux-like symptoms. They can have pain, vomiting, problems with swallowing. And if you have those kinds of symptoms, I'd encourage you to explore them with your GP. And if with, you know, high dose antacids, it's not going away, it is worth considering referral to the clinicians, to the consultants, to the gastroenterologist to explore whether this might be actually the disease that's underlying it, because unfortunately, the antacids will not treat it. What patients can do is they can swallow a steroid that has been basically coated in a solution that's going to slow its transit through the esophagus and bathe the esophagus with the steroid. And that helps a lot of patients, again, but not all patients. And if you do have constant symptoms where food is getting stuck and you do have one of these things that we call the stricturing, the narrowing, that food just can't pass, they can go in with this balloon and inflate the balloon and relieve some of that pressure to allow for the food to transit through without delay. But obviously that doesn't treat the underlying symptoms. So I think, you know, our research is really looking at repairing that barrier to try and quieten down that inflammation that's going on to then allow healing to occur. Hopefully this narrowing and this swelling will go away.
How rare is it?
So it is a rare disease. It's classified as a rare disease. About 1 in 2,000 people have it. And if you compare that to something like asthma, asthma is in about 1 in 10, 1 in 20 of the population. So it's not as, it's 100 times less common than asthma, but I do see it increasing. So that wasn't, it wasn't always 1 in 2000. It was much less than that when I first joined the field, and it, we're seeing it more and more and more. We're counting it more and more. And I think it's going to become more and more common. And it is increasing at a similar rate to inflammatory bowel disease, which is another chronic intestinal disease, which is much more common.
Have you seen anything that looks like a potential killer treatment? Or is there something that you're looking at the moment that you think this actually could work very well for this condition? Because it'd be great, as you say, to work in science and actually provide something that that makes a material difference to people with this disease to, you know, today or in the next 10 years.
Yes, definitely. So the focus of our research is a type of a molecule that we think is really targetable, and it's being explored in other diseases with a drug that's in clinical trials for other disorders.
Great.
So we're looking at that and trying to see if we could repurpose that drug for patients with eosinophilic esophagitis. And we're talking to a number of companies now about doing that work. And then there are other drugs that have been approved for the likes of asthma, that are working for some patients with eosinophilic esophagitis. So again, another repurposing situation where it has worked really well in other allergic diseases, and now it might work well in some patients, but unfortunately not all patients. So I think there's definitely hope there. And I think there's some, you know, there's a good few things on the horizon. We're all very active in that area.
Well, I wish you the very best of luck with it, Dr. Joanne Masterson of Maynooth University. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.